Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on critical condition when we come back right after this. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on the Law Hour are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this class includes lessons that range from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint or a summons or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom either. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, and what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements, 28 things that you need to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you just call direct, 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It doesn't cost anything. And let me tell you how this can be so important to you in your everyday, workaday life. Now, this is a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, we've been talking about critical condition. Very important book, about a 1 in 20 read. Sometimes I rate books and I say, oh my God, this is a 1 in 100 read. You'll read 100 books before you can find another book like this. Well, there's quite a few books out there in the marketplace concerning medicine and health and insurance and health care and one thing and another, so this isn't the only book that talks about that subject, but it's about a 1 in 20 read. You'll read another 19 books before you'll find another one like this in the health care field. And it's called Critical Condition. It's written by Donald L. Barlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T, and James B. Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, published by Doubleday. And it's a fairly new book. It just came out in November of 2004, so we're only talking about a book, you know, that's 6, 7, 8 months old. And it's a dynamite publication. Let me tell you that I can only cover the high spots. And what I'm hitting here, the God, can you believe this part of the story? The details, you know, the devil is in the details, and the details are in the book. So for the $26, now I looked up here in the front of the book, and my wife evidently put in 10%, so she must have got a 10% discount. It says $22.45 here. I forgot to ask her if that was the price of it, but my guess is that it was $22.45, and she more than likely bought it at Barnes & Noble. Just be my guess. Barnes & Noble, or you could probably get it at any bookstore. You can certainly order it. Doubleday, pretty famous name, you know, in book publishers. It's not the National Enquirer or the Star. Doubleday. The name of the book, again, Critical Condition. And the authors are Barlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T. No T in there, just B-A-R-L-E-T-T and James B. Steele. All right, now I've promoted the book. Now let me tell you what a very important segment of the book has to say, talking about Madison Avenue. And Madison Avenue is a very potent sales tool We've been discussing that Madison Avenue connection here with Listerine. But it seems like no one is happy, nobody is satisfied with the healthcare industry as it is today. The government tells us 44 million people are without health insurance. And so those 44 million people, they're unhappy because they don't have insurance. Now, those people who do have insurance, they're unhappy because the premiums are too high. The insurance industry, they're unhappy because the policyholders and the doctors are gouging them and denying them the profits that they think that they're entitled to. The insured people are unhappy because when they go to the doctor or when they try to get a doctor's visit or when they try to cash in on their insurance policy, they run into clerks that put them on hold and then they have their appendix rupture or they die from some other disease because they were unable to get through to a doctor because they couldn't get through the clerk who's not a healthcare professional. And the doctors and the healthcare providers are unhappy because the insurance companies are screwing them and they're not getting paid. And so we see examples after example after example here in the book about these kinds of cases. Just multiply that by millions. And everybody is unhappy. And that's because the American healthcare system is a private socialist program. And we think of socialism primarily as being a government-sponsored institution. And in England and Canada and Germany and most countries, and at least in the Western world, medicine is socialized. It's socialized medicine from the government, top down. In America, we rejected top-down government socialism. We have a private socialist system, which is administered through the insurance industry, which is a violation of the biblical code that we received from Moses, which requires that we practice strict liability and insurance is limited liability. So we practice limited liability and nobody's happy with it. And we have communism and socialism in the healthcare system, which means that everybody gets to stand in line and share the shortage. That's what communism and socialism is all about. Stand in line and share the shortage. So I've been pointing out to you that when I was a kid, we didn't stand in line, we didn't share the shortage, and nobody was complaining about the healthcare system, at least not to my knowledge, because we paid cash. So you try that. You walk into your doctor. Just go pick a doctor out of the yellow pages. Make an appointment. Walk in. Tell him, examine me, doc. And he'll examine you and he'll take your history down. And then when you get through, reach in your pocket and pull out whatever the fee is. You know, say, doc, how much is this fee? And he'll say, well, it's $75 for your initial office visit. Reach in your purse, reach in your pocket, pull out $75, hand it to him and tell him, doc, I don't need a receipt. And then walk out. And I'll guarantee you that unless that doctor's brain dead, you know, brain dead, D-E-D, dead, he'll be able to put two and two together and say, you know, that's a valuable customer there. Then take the insurance premiums that you've been paying, you know, those $253, $400, $500 a month premiums, and stick them in a sock someplace every month. Put that $500 in a sock, and you know you'll have more $75 bills for those office visits. And I'll tell you something else. The next time your kid rushes in and says, oh, mommy, mommy, my throat hurts, you'll say, well, you little sucker, let me look at your throat. I don't think this warrants going to the doctor. Because you know every time you have to spend $75, you'll think twice about going to the doctor. You will self-regulate the amount of doctor's office visits that you want to make. I mean, just wild new concept, you know. Now, mounting pressure to introduce new drugs. Let's talk about new drugs in Madison Avenue. This mounting pressure to introduce all of these new drugs as fast as new soups and soaps is going to continue to pose ever greater health risks, let alone costs, as doctors prescribe medicines without fully knowing or understanding the long-term consequences. And it often takes years for a drug's truly serious side effects to show up. The same will be true for dangerous interactions between drugs as people consume more kinds of pills for longer periods. All that's certain is people will die, and how many remains to be seen. Now, medical ethicists and pharmaceutical industry executives, to get around what is often portrayed as the first rule of medicine, and that is to help, or at least do no harm, Well, these good folks have come up with their own justification for the bad luck that will befall some of these people that are taking these new drugs. And these ethicists and pharmaceutical industry bigwigs reason that if 1 million people take a certain drug like Vioxx, and that drug helps some, has no effect at all on others, harms a small number, and then kills a few, then they've satisfied the Hippocratic Oath. And it also fattens the bottom line. Now, the medical community's interpretation of do no harm certainly has merit in treating fatal diseases, and possibly even in treating diseases that might one day become fatal. But it's questionable in situations that are not immediately life-threatening. More important, the theory is indefensible unless it is explained clearly by the prescribing doctor, and unless the label on the medicine bottle states unequivocally the potential outcome, no matter how small the risk. Now, we all know that when we get in a car, that we take a chance, there's a risk that we'll be injured or die in an accident, and most of us do not know that we're taking a risk with medicine. We assume when we take medicine that it's going to make us better, or at least when we take this medicine, we presume at least it's not going to worsen our condition, and we certainly don't expect to die from it, now do we? Now, Mary J. Lennon, a 30-year-old Hingham, Massachusetts woman, planned to get married. Well, in the spring of 1996, about 25 pounds overweight, Lennon obtained a prescription for two widely touted diet drugs. And at the time, they were all the rage of the news media. They were the rage of the talk shows in Wall Street and all the morning news programs. The popular name was called Fen-Phen, spelled F-E-N hyphen P-H-E-N, Fen-Phen. The Fen, F-E-N half, was shortened for fenfluramine, a cousin of the antidepressant Prozac. Prozac, boys and girls. Fen was marketed under the brand name Pondimin, P-O-N-D-I-M-I-N, by Weiss Company. The Fen, P-H-E-N half, was Phentermine, sold under its generic name. Together, these two drugs altered the brain's chemistry to curb the craving for food. Now, Lennon took the medications for less than a month. Then her health began to deteriorate. She suffered heart palpitations, shortness of breath. She began to lose her vision and was hospitalized six times. By February 1997, she was dead, and the official cause was called pulmonary hypertension associated with fenfluramine and phentermine therapy. Now, Fen-Phen's sudden popularity followed the arc of so many medications. In May of 1992, the journal Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics published the results of a diet drug, a study conducted by Dr. Michael Weintraub, a researcher at the University of Rochester School of Medicine. Weintraub's four-year clinical trial, funded by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, showed substantial weight loss by people who took these two drugs, Fen-Phen. Although each had been independently approved for weight loss years earlier by the FDA, the agency had never given its approval for the use of these two drugs in combination, meaning that they were prescribed together off-label. So let me stop, pause here for a moment. They've mentioned this a number of times. So the FDA approved Fen, and then later they approved Fen. That's, they approved F-E-N, and then they approved later P-H-E-N. Both of them are weight loss drugs, but they never approved the both of them to be used together. Now, some researcher is using both of them together and says, oh my gosh, look at the weight loss. It's twice as good. And so now it's off-label. It's not approved. Did you know that? Did anybody tell you that this drug is probably relatively safe if you use one without the other? But did anybody tell you when you use them in combination that they could be lethal? And here's the kicker. See, they're not lethal to everybody. You know, 1 million people take the drug, and 999,000 of them get by quite well. Maybe they have, you know, some side effects, and they lose weight, and they're just happy as a clam. But 1,000 people die. Now, you know, according to the pharmaceutical companies, you know, if 1 million people lose weight, and, hey, only 1,000 of them die, that seems to be perfectly acceptable. What's wrong with that? Well, you know, if you're the one guy that dies, it's not acceptable to you, is it? Now, as long as somebody tells you that there's a risk involved, you know, you're the proximate cause of your own injury. But I never heard of anybody saying, hey, wait a minute, did you know that one in a million or a thousand out of a million, you know, maybe 1% or 0.1% of these people may die. This may give you a side effect over here. Many of these people that took Fen-Phen are long-term cripples. I mean, their hearts are so screwed up that they're going to be impaired for the rest of their lives. They'll never be able to live a normal, average life again. Now, the news media, as it is given to do upon publication of a new study in a medical journal, they rushed to proclaim the latest miracle drug. Never mind that such articles sometimes might have all the depth of the National Enquirer taking on astrology, or mere publication in a scientific journal is sufficient for most of these newspapers and news media advocates to warrant a few minutes on national news or the morning talk shows and prominent headlines in newspapers everywhere. Drugs found to keep lost flab off, asserted the headline over a New York Times article published July 5, 1992. And here's what the Times reported. This is the article, July 5, 1992, New York Times. I said, quote, some experts on weight loss hailed the study, saying it could mark a profound and pronounced shift in the way obesity is studied and treated. These experts said the results showed obesity could be treated the way chronic diseases like high blood pressure or arthritis are. In those diseases, drugs can be taken indefinitely to keep symptoms in check, unquote. New York Times. July 5th, 1992. Now, you know, if you read that, you'd say, wow, you know, geez, I'm fat and I need to take off some weight. And I'm not very enthused about having to go hungry, to cut back on my food intake. I'm not happy about having to give up, chocolates and bonbons and Big Macs and fries. And so this sounds really great. I can go down here and spend $25, get a prescription, and I'll just eat what I want. No fuss, no muss, no pain, no gain. Everybody likes to listen. Everybody wants to hear this kind of a story. And that's the key to sales. You tell people what they want to hear. You tell them what they want to hear. And you're going to hear exactly what you want to hear. And people want to hear that I can take a pill and solve that problem. I don't have to work. I don't have to suffer. Now, we're all motivated by five motivators. It's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And Madison Avenue is a master at pulling your strings. They'll tell you what you want to hear, make you feel good all over, and they'll sell you what you want to buy. And you want to buy a pill, and by golly, they're going to sell it to you. No matter whether it makes you lose weight or not, they're going to sell you the pill, and you're going to buy it. Now, I would suggest that we stop and reconsider. If it sounds too good to be true, boys and girls, it probably is. Now, a day later, the CBS Morning News weighed in. They said that for years, the top diet researchers predicted that in the future, we would treat weight control with medications. Well, the future is here today. After reviewing the study findings, CBS medical reporter said, quote, these are just the first medications, and we're expected to see better and better medications. What I suspect is going to happen is this, that just like with high blood pressure and high cholesterol, you're expected to do a little something, get on a diet, begin an exercise program, but once you're done with your part, doctors are going to give you the medications, unquote. Now, for overweight people, the answer seemed clear. Take some pills and lose weight. To be sure, the blizzard of stories often contained caveats. You know, they gave you some warnings. They told you about the possible side effects and the unknown consequences of long-term usage. And sometimes this cautionary advice was limited to a phrase or a sentence or two. But even the lengthier warnings were drowned out by the testimonials from those who lost weight, taking the drugs, as well as from the physicians who prescribed them. The upbeat stories led to the opening of weight loss clinics that dispensed these drugs, which in turn led to ever more positive publicity, which in turn prompted and promoted ever more promising reports from physicians specializing in weight loss. So Dr. Weintraub, whose article sparked the diet pill revolution, joined the FDA in Washington, from where he offered advice to budding FinFin entrepreneurs. The positive publicity seemed to be never-ending. 3 years later, in February 1995, the ABC News program 2020 opened a show this way. They said, quote, well now, a medical breakthrough that is changing the lives and the images of thousands of Americans. They're people with a serious problem. They're obese. And that description now applies to more of us than ever before. Obese people often say that they can't help it, that they feel driven to eat beyond control. Well, now there is research that backs them up, and even more exciting, a new treatment that seems to do for these people what they cannot do by themselves, unquote. Hey, I got to pause here. You know why you people feel like you're driven to eat? And that's because those Big Macs and Burger Kings over there, they put additives in the food. Did you know that? Yeah, they put drugs in the food. Additives. And those additives taste real good. They're like drugs, and they hook you. And it's been well known and well researched that these additives like MSG that are put into these foods become addictive and habit-forming, just like cocaine and heroin. And that's why you feel compelled to eat more. It tastes real good, boys and girls. And so in order to satisfy that it tastes real good feeling, you eat more of it. And, of course, they supersize it, charge a little more for it, and then they make more profit off of it. Meanwhile, you get fatter and fatter. Everybody needs to eat, but you don't need to eat that much. And that's just well-known, well-documented Madison Avenue sales promotion. And it makes you feel good, and as you get fatter and fatter and you eat more and more, and somebody comes along and says, hey, just take this pill over here. Boy, that sounds even better yet, doesn't it? And as I said before, you buy what it is that you want to hear. And if you live your life like, I'm going to buy what I want to hear, then that's exactly what you're going to do. Now take a look at the results that you're getting. If the results are what you want, then you're in Fat City. If they're not, have you ever considered, gee, maybe I ought to change my modus operandi? Now the drum roll continued through 1995. At one point, Wythe Pharmaceuticals was unable to turn out enough of this FinFin to meet the demand, and a nationwide shortage developed. By year's end, Fortune magazine had joined the frenzy, at least from a financial standpoint, taking note of the billions that could be made in the diet business. The potential for the pharmaceutical industry was enormous. And consider about 58 million adults carry enough extra weight to put them at some kind of health risk, not all of them will want or qualify for drug treatment, but enough will so that Wall Street is smelling the bacon. Wall Street's enthusiasm for FinFin only grew when the FDA approved its first new weight loss drug in more than 20 years. Never mind that the vote was by the narrowest of margins and under curious circumstances. The drug called Redux, R-E-D-U-X, was a cousin of Pondamine, one of the FinFin pair. It was developed by Interneuron Pharmaceuticals, a high-flying biotech company in Lexington, Massachusetts, and marketed once more by, guess who, Wythe Pharmaceuticals. Citing safety concerns, an FDA panel originally rejected Redux in September of 1995 by a narrow vote of 5-3. A highly unusual second meeting was called in November. Obviously, the first one was a mistake, so we're going to fix that mistake. With some of the original dissenters now absent, the panel this time approved Redux by a 6-5 vote. Politics won out again over patient safety, and the FDA subsequently authorized sale of the new drug called Redux. As Fortune had predicted, Wall Street greeted Redux enthusiastically, and what we have here is probably the fastest launch of any drug in the history of the pharmaceutical industry, said one securities analyst. Our projection is that this product will hit $1 billion in sales in 5 years. Wythe was ecstatic. At the end of 1996, the company told stockholders that the introduction of Redux was one of the most successful U.S. drug launches ever. Now, notice that FinFin's been pulled from the market. Vioxx is pulled from the market. Hey, listen, there's these super drugs, you know, that hit the market, and then about 10 years later, they have to recall them because they're killing too many people. So the next time some new miracle drug hits the market, you know, what I do, I wait 10 years. And then I take a look at all the experiments that you people have, that you people have lived through, and I say, well, gee, now do I want to take the drug? So I took a look at the experiments on FenFen and came to the conclusion, nope, I don't think I'll do that. And then I looked at all of you people, all of you guinea pigs out there taking Vioxx, and I said, okay, Dorothy Hamill and all you good guinea pigs out there, my conclusion is it kills people. I think I'll beg off, and I'm healthier for it. But thank God for all of you guinea pigs out there that are testing these drugs for me to make sure that they're safe and wholesome for little Georgie Gordon. Now, physicians that year wrote 18 million prescriptions for Redux. That's in 1996. And no one wrote them faster than Dr. Peter Hitzig, spelled P-I-E-T-R, Hitzig, H-I-T-Z-I-G, who dispensed the drugs from his office in Timonium, Maryland. That's a Baltimore suburb, as well as over the internet. So this Dr. Peter Hitzig is selling the stuff as fast as he can sell. And traffic was so heavy at times that patients began popping the pills while still in the waiting room. In time, he would brag on his website that he had successfully treated over 8,000 patients with FenFen. And not just for obesity, but for other conditions, from alcoholism to Gulf War syndrome. How do you like that? In addition to individual entrepreneurs like Hitzig, clinics also handed out FenFen like candy. In the Los Angeles area, an estimated 10,000 people visited the offices of the California Medical Weight Loss Associates, said Aaron Bonman, the group's administrator. This is L.A. people, and this is L.A., and you people tend to want to be thinner than the rest of the country. Allowing that he personally took FenFen, Bauman said the drugs work like magic. And the country's weight loss programs, large and small, were swept up by the diet drug craze. Nutrisystems Incorporated, one of the biggest and best known, converted 9 of its Philadelphia area offices to NutraRx clinics that offered the FenFen regimen and advertised 2 free months of the pills for dieters who switched from competitor Jenny Craig, said Nutrisystems Vice President of Scientific Affairs. I don't believe it's another fad. I think you're seeing a new direction in the treatment of obesity. In Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, a Boston suburb, the Medical Weight Loss Center advertised hot new diet pills, FenFen and Redux, lose 20 pounds in 4 weeks. It was maddening. As it turned out, the FDA diet doctors, family practitioners, Wall Street analysts, and news media that promoted FenFen had made a mistake. What? What? A mistake? Well, throughout the country, patients who had taken the two drugs developed defects in their heart valves. Even as reports surfaced about the drug's adverse side effects, the FDA was slow to respond to it. And it wasn't until July of 1997, 5 months after the death of Mary Lennon, that the agency issued a warning to physicians that patients taking the drugs should be closely monitored. The agency did so after doctors at 2 separate clinics in North Dakota and Minnesota independently discovered that 24 previously healthy women who were taking FenFen had developed primary pulmonary hypertension. It's a rare disorder in which blood pressure rises far above normal in the artery, carrying the blood to the lungs, making the heart work harder. Some patients may need round-the-clock oxygen, some a heart-lung transplant, some may die. And gosh, all I was doing was taking a diet pill. Well, the FDA should have been more vigilant. The diet pill fad had taken hold in France. At least it took hold in France several years earlier, and it had led to illness and death in France. But we couldn't learn from the French experience. France's equivalent to the FDA estimated that 20 to 40 people were dying each year from primary pulmonary hypertension. 2 months after its warning notice, citing new evidence of serious side effects, the FDA asked for the withdrawal of FenFen and Redux, and the FDA made its decision after doctors prescribing the drugs found that 30% of patients had abnormal, let's see if I can pronounce this, echocardiograms. That's easy enough. Echocardiograms, a much higher than expected percentage. The findings call for prompt action, said Dr. Michael A. Friedman. He's an FDA deputy commissioner. He added that the data we have obtained indicate that FenFen and the chemically closely related Redux present an unacceptable risk at this time to patients who take them. Now, to dispose of the lawsuits filed by women and men who suffered the heart valve damage, Wythe set aside more than $16 billion by 2003. As for Dr. Hitzig, he surrendered his medical license, and in July of 1999, he was indicted on 34 counts of illegal drug distribution. He subsequently was convicted and sent to prison. FenFen's phenomenal sales were fueled by the media, word of mouth, print advertising, and more significantly, by a diet industry that employed the same promotional practices that drug companies use in their direct-to-consumer marketing. And that is, they exaggerated the benefits, downplayed the risks, and in the process encouraged use of the drugs by people who really didn't need them. Now, for several reasons, the FenFen story portends more disquieting news for people popping pills in recent years, with even more harmful or deadly consequences. And one reason is the runaway growth in the practice of prescribing drugs for conditions that are not originally intended, so-called off-label prescriptions. And the FDA approves drugs for treatment of a specific condition. But through trial and error, doctors will often find that a drug is effective for treating other illnesses, at least in some people, and are free to write these prescriptions for that purpose. So in the case of FenFen, the individual drugs were FDA approved, but not their use in combination. So I want to emphasize that. Now, hang on. I got to take a break here, and we'll take a look at what happens when you take drugs in combination. And we'll find out that most people, you know, that are taking drugs, if they're over 65, if you're taking drugs, you're taking six drugs all at the same time. You ever wonder what the combination of six drugs at the same time could be on you? Well, hang on. I'll tell you right after this. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and it's worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And you can access the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. We research these fairly carefully. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. So I'm going to get that static out of there. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. They may not like us at all, and vice versa. And most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be endorsed necessarily by us here at the Law Hour Editorial Review, or they may not endorse our view. But for the purposes of this book, for instance, it's a dynamite book, and we certainly agree with their conclusions and their reporting. So the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, so don't blame anybody else. And do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, heaven forbid, or the sponsors, the management, or the staff of the network or of this local radio station. So don't blame anybody but me. And for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, in case you're a right-wing radical fanatic like I am, just go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct. That's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's georgegordon.org for the website, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, let me give another plug here for the book, published by Doubleday. Doubleday. That's not the National Enquirer or the Star now. That's Doubleday Publishing. They're kind of a big outfit in New York City. And the book is called Critical Condition. It's an expose of the healthcare system in America and what's wrong with it. And boy, have they labeled what's wrong with it. I mean, it's shocking. Makes your eyes bug out. The guy that wrote it, Donald L. Barlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T, and James B. Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, wrote a dynamite book on an expose that I would suggest needs to be heard by everybody. I mean, I'm not opposed to Vioxx. Hell, if you people want to suck up pills, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But don't you think you ought to be warned about the side effects? Like this fen that we just reported on here. Hey, you know, if you want to take these diet pills, that's fine. Just be aware that about 1,000 people out of every million die from it. So just tuck that one away in your heart, or whatever these numbers are. I don't know that it's 1,000 out of a million. I'm just picking a number here. But hey, listen, death is death, and it's kind of final. So I would like to be informed. And I'm not being informed by Madison Avenue, and that's the point in this chapter. They tell you the good stuff. They make you salivate. They make you feel good. They tell you what you want to hear. They sell you what you want to buy, and then it harms you. And then you get real upset, and you say, well, how could the FDA do that? Well, it's a part and parcel with our socialist healthcare system, so you might want to review your political connections with the healthcare system and terminate it. Communism is the system whereby we stand in line and share the shortage. And if that's what you want to do, you're on the right track. Stick with it. If you're not happy with the program, why don't you consider changing? Now listen to this. Overlying this are two other relatively recent phenomena. First, the number of individual patients taking multiple drugs is growing daily. And they're taking more different kinds of drugs than ever before. Many over the age of 65 take six or more different drugs in addition to the over-the-counter medication. So you people are taking six prescription drugs. On average, if you're 65, you're taking six prescription drugs that your doctor's giving you. And then you go down here to the over-the-counter drugs and you buy the crap that comes over the counter. And add that to what you're taking. What does that do to you? Well, some patients see several physicians for their prescriptions, and they fill them at different pharmacies so that no one tracks their total usage. Baby boomers who grew up mixing antidepressants, antibiotics, antihistamines, and other assorted medications will up the ante as they age, and so too will their children, at least those in metropolitan areas. People who have elevated prescription drugs to a new level, best described by a 25-year-old female graduate student in New York Magazine. She said, I take an antidepressant called Celexa, and I take Ambien for sleep disorders, and then I stay up an extra half hour just so I can feel kind of looped. I call it my little Ambien party for one. You know, Americans have become drug addicts. We have our legal drug dispensers. That's the doctor. You go down to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, I need a little Ambien. Hey, I need a little of this, need a little of that. He gives it to you, like Ritalin, you know. Hell, they're selling that Ritalin, by the way, just like Joe the drug dealer down on the corner. you go down here and you get Ritalin for your kid, and then you turn around and you sell it to your friends and neighbors, you know, so they can have their little drug parties. And that's the legal drugs. And get this, the legal drugs kill 130,000 people a year that they admit to. The real number is more than 250,000. 130,000 that they admit to. It's called iatrogenic disease. And then they've got this multi-billion dollar war on drugs. War on drugs. I wondered why. Because the illegal drugs, crack cocaine, heroin, marijuana, and all these drugs, you know, ecstasy and so on. Do you know how many people die from those illegal drugs every year? 6,000. 6,000 die from illegal drugs. 130,000 die from the prescription drugs given by your doctors. And you're spending billions of dollars for this war on drugs? What you need is a war on doctors, hospitals, and pharmaceutical companies. I would suggest that if you shut off all drugs in America in the morning, less people would die. Just leave Joe, the cocaine crack dealer, alone. He doesn't kill as many people as the doctors do. Now, at the same time, the pharmaceutical industry is flooding the market with ever more drugs to increase sales. So during the 1970s, the FDA approved 173 new drugs. So in 10 years, 173, 17 drugs a year. That jumped to 279 in the 1980s. That's 28 drugs a year. And in 1990s, it was 359 drugs. To keep the money rolling in for prescription drugs whose patents are expiring, the industry is beginning to combine two different drugs in a single pill. This adds up to a growing potential for lethal reactions from a deadly mix of drugs that no one understands. No one understands. Well, until it's too late. As for the case with the heart drug N-canide, let's see if that's pronounced right, E-N-C-A-I-N-I-D-E, N-canide, which killed people during the 1980s instead of saving them, making this even harder to track. The honor system for reporting adverse drug reactions is primitive at best. The FDA itself has acknowledged that it is impossible to accurately quantify adverse event rates because the FDA's post-marketing surveillance system receives reports on only a relatively small percentage of all adverse events caused by drugs. In short, the drugs that you take ultimately may harm or kill you, but no one may ever notice, and they may never tell if they do. Now listen to this. When somebody dies, let's say they have pneumonia and they die, nobody is going to put on the death certificate, gosh, this guy died as a result. He got pneumonia as a result of the weakening of his immune system caused by the cocktail of drugs he was taking. Nobody puts that on the death certificate. When an AIDS patient dies, they don't say, well, this guy died from AIDS. They say, no, he died from pneumonia. Nobody says, well, gosh, he died from pneumonia because he had a weakened immune system, which caused him to get the pneumonia. All right. Tuck that one away in your heart. Now, there's a celebrity pitch. Now we get the movie stars and the sports stars, you know, all these great people out here, they're taking drugs. I remember I saw an ad last night by Dale Robertson. He was smoking Pall-Mall cigarettes. I don't know how they got Pall-Mall out of P-A-L-L. It sounded like Pall-Mall to me, but they called it Pall-Mall cigarettes. And Dale Robertson says, they're good, good, good. You know, if you listen to sports and movie stars, you know, if you like Dale Robertson and you like, you know, some particular celebrity, and if he eats it or if he drinks it, well, it must be good for you. That's part of Madison Avenue's pitch. It's the methodology whereby we sell you things that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and are probably going to harm you. Now, to peddle these new drugs, pharmaceutical companies in Madison Avenue have teamed up and turned to the celebrities. Revered sports figures, entertainers, race car drivers, actresses, television show hosts, children of once prominent public figures and models have now become pivotal in the incessant campaign to boost sales of drugs and to pressure doctors to write more prescriptions. Mike Ditka, the five-time Pro Bowl tight end for the Chicago Bears, who later coached the team to a victory in Super Bowl 20, uses a double entendre to sell Bear pharmaceuticals in GlaxoSmithKline's Levitra. Levitra. It's like Viagra. It's a Viagra competitor for erectile dysfunction. Every coach knows the ability to stay in the game is what counts. So if you want to stay in the game, don't let anything hold you back. Take action to stay in the game. Ask about Levitra, unquote. Now, Eric Lindberg exploits the achievements of his grandfather, Charles A. Lindberg, who in 1927 became the first person to fly solo across the Atlantic. He sells Wythe, and they have an Amgen's Embril for rheumatoid arthritis. It's called RA. Rheumatoid arthritis. Even the rheumatoid arthritis. I'm an artist, pictured woodworking. I'm athletic. He's riding a bicycle. I'm a father holding a child on the beach. And today, I can still be all of these things with Embril. I'm Eric Lindberg. And even with RA, I was able to fly solo to Paris, just like my grandfather. Because Embril, I can be me. Mark Martin, he's one of the most successful racers in NASCAR history. Mark Martin, he drives a Winston Cup car sponsored by Pfizer's Viagra and also promotes the drug in commercials. He says, quote, I know a little something about making good moves. So if you're thinking about Viagra, one of the best moves you can make is a pit stop to see your doctor, unquote. Penny Marshall, the motion picture producer who began her career as Laverne in the 1970s hit television series Laverne and Shirley. She promotes Merck's Zocor, although indirectly and never by name. Instead of identifying the drug, Marshall talks about the importance of a new book, also without mentioning the title of the book. Information about the heart protection study and Zocor. Mother, father, husband, grandparent, or friend, I'm Penny Marshall, and chances are we all know someone who could learn from this book. Then a female announcer says, quote, the heart protection study is here. Get this book that includes information about the study and treatment options. And then adds Marshall, your physician knows how important this is, unquote. Go to your doctor. Go to your doctor. Go to your doctor. Well, the doctor is a drug pusher. Your doctor is a drug salesman. He sells drugs. Now, we get real excited and upset, you know, when you got Joe the drug salesman down on the street corner who's selling these drugs, you know, crack and cocaine and heroin and marijuana. And by the way, old Joe down on the street corner, that's the free marketplace at work. The illegal drugs cost about one-tenth of what the legal drugs cost. And get this, I had a druggist here one time, a student. You know, he's in the drug business. He's a druggist. And he said, all of the drugs that you buy out on the street, you know, like crack, heroin, marijuana, cocaine, all of these drugs are available in the drugstore. I mix them up. I sell them in the drugstore. They have different names, and they cost 10 times more. Can you see why the major pharmaceutical companies and the government has a war on drugs? I find it hard to believe that the government really cares about people taking drugs. It's not the drugs that they're opposed to. It's where are you getting your drugs? Are you buying cheap discount drugs from Joe, the crack dealer down on the street corner, who isn't licensed, bonded, and insured and paying taxes? Well, that's got to stop. But it's okay for you to buy heroin. They don't call it heroin. When you buy heroin from your druggist, they get a different name for it. I guess they call that Ritalin or something. I don't know. But they get different names for it. But all of the street drugs are for sale in the drugstore under a different name for 10 times more money. And they kill, let me just see how many more people they kill, because the illegal drug dealers are killing 6,000 people a year. And the legal drug dealers admit to killing 130,000. So I'm going to plug in 130,000, divide that by 6,000, and what do we get? 21.67. So the doctor, you know, they tell you, see your doctor, ask your doctor, go to your doctor. Is Zocor right for you? Ask your doctor. Go to your drug dealer and ask him if Zocor is right for you. Go to your drug dealer and ask him if crack is good for you. Go to your drug dealer Joe on the corner and ask him if heroin is for you. Americans have become drug addicts. The whole nation is a nation of drug addicts, druggies, legal and illegal. That's all that boils down to. Dorothy Hamill is a drug pusher. Dorothy Hamill, who won an Olympic gold medal for figure skating in the 1976 Olympics in Innsbruck and was later named most trusted sports figure in America by Ladies Home Journal. She trades on her skating background to sell Merck's Vioxx for osteoarthritis. It's a beautiful morning. This is my favorite time to skate. I guess it's from all those years of 5 a.m. practices, but it's also the time when the pain and stiffness of osteoarthritis can be at their worst. Now, the Dorothy Hamill commercial was deemed the second most effective prescription drug ad for 2002 by the Intermedia Advertising Group. Madison Avenue, you know, they rate their advertising. You know, what works? What is it to get you people to buy these drugs? But no celebrity has done it better than the ageless supermodel Lauren Hutton, living proof that endorsements often are the gift that keeps on giving long after the commercial or the ad appears. A one-time Playboy bunny, Hutton began her career as a model and went on to make movies. She hosted her own syndicated television talk show, invented her own beauty products, and finally turned to modeling. Modeling, a symbol of graceful and elegant aging as she approached 60. Now, given her youthful appearance and oft-stated opposition to plastic surgery, Hutt made the perfect pitch woman for wife's hormone replacement drugs, Prempo and Premarin, especially at a time when the oldest baby boomers were entering menopause. Women everywhere were intent on finding the fountain of youth, and estrogen seemed to be the answer. Hutton not only looked great, she also came across as a sincere believer in the product. Better still, she didn't have to mention wife by name. All she needed to do was talk about the miracle of estrogen replacement. The millions of American women who rushed to their doctors only had to request estrogen, and they were handed prescriptions for Wythe's products. Hutton even sang the praises of estrogen in situations seemingly unrelated to Wythe. In 1999, Yankelevich, the marketing consultancy group that specializes in identifying lifestyle trends and targeting solutions for its customers, surveyed 1,000 women between the ages of 50 and 65 on their sex lives, and they found that women taking hormone replacement therapy are more sexually active than their counterparts. To underscore the point, the press release included the poll results on sex and menopause, carried the personal observations of Hutton, the forever model, as an HRT, that's hormone replacement therapy, HRT. And as an HRT user for more than 9 years, I can attest to its impact on my health and well-being. I feel as alive and sexy at age 55 as I did at 30. The survey was the first project of Vitality for Life, an educational campaign that just happened to be funded by Wythe. The release was issued at a time when the largest group of American women in history was experiencing, or soon would be experiencing, these dreadful hot flashes and mood swings, that it was validated by an attractive spokeswoman, already a certified member of the affected generation, led to the predictable television appearances. In what must have been music to the ears of the Wythe executives marketing, Diane Sawyer introduced the subject on ABC's Good Morning Show. By the year 2000, 50 million American women over the age of 50, leading to the chance to live longer lives, and especially sexually active longer lives as they want to. And joining us now is a woman who has been living her life that way for quite a while, but says it is even better now at 55 than it was when she was 30. Lauren Hutton joins us this morning. Unquote. So with Diane Sawyer leading the way and Hutton pitching the product, Hutton didn't disappoint. In response to a question about the really nice romantic life that follows menopause and the failure of women to talk about it, Hutton said, they're not, and they should they should see their doctor or a clinic, or Planned Parenthood can help you, and they'll tell you about estrogen. I started taking estrogen, which are hormone replacement therapies, and my doctor told me if I didn't, I would get old, that I would shrink, and I did shrink. I shrunk an inch, and I was already short to begin with. Hutton said her doctor, who warned her that if she didn't take this HRT, this hormone replacement, that I was up for colon cancer, eye loss, osteoporosis, shrinkage, lots of things. So for 8 years, she told Sawyer, she had been taking this HRT, and life had never been better. Hutton sounded a lot like the physicians of the 1920s who prescribed this estrogen, then extracted from the urine of pregnant women or gynecological clinics with the promise that it would cure everything from hair loss to schizophrenia. You know where this estrogen comes from? Horse urine. You're drinking horse piss, ladies. The Wythe advertising blitz, accompanied by an avalanche of favorable reports in newspapers and magazines on TV, included Hutton's unqualified endorsement. Now, you know what happened, don't you, with this hormone replacement therapy? Well, they stayed at roughly that level. In other words, the 50 to 90 million women taking this horse piss stayed at that level through June of 2002, when the only serious federal study of this hormone replacement linked it to an increased risk of, guess what? Heart disease, stroke, blood clots, and breast cancer. After that, prescriptions fell steadily, dropped back to 57 million in 2003. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of the marketing campaign was that it was the second time that Wythe had peddled this estrogen product with dubious claims. You see, 30 years earlier, Wythe had introduced another generation of women to estrogen. In 1962, the Journal of the American Medical Association published an article reporting that estrogen and progesterone given to 304 women between the ages of 40 and 70 had proved prophylactic to breast and genital cancer. The study was authored by Dr. Robert A. Wilson, a Brooklyn, New York gynecologist whose work was funded in part by the pharmaceutical industry. Guess who? Wythe sponsored the study. Now listen, estrogen replacement was discredited 40 or 50, 60, 70 years ago, for crying out loud. And so they just bring it back. Now listen, take this Vioxx. Okay, now you see how this Vioxx has been proven to be a killer, see? So they took it off the market. Well, back in 58, there was a drug that they put out on the market that caused birth defects. I forgot the name of it. I can't remember all these names, but caused birth defects. Well, listen, did you think that they banned that drug? No, they brought it back. And they're using it for something else now. Well, of course, they warn you, you know, if you're pregnant, don't take it. But here's the drug that caused all of these birth defects back in the 50s and 60s. And they took that off the market. And so what they do is they take these drugs after they have killed people and maimed them and caused all these problems. And then after, you know, 30, 40 years, they bring them back and they sell them under a new label through Madison Avenue. And that's what we want. We're a nation of pill poppers. We like drugs. And always remember that drugs are prohibited in the scripture. They're called witchcraft. You know, you take the witch that's out here stirring up her brew in her pot, cooking up this mix, and popping these pills, these mind-altering drugs and so on. Drugs, whether they're legal or illegal, is a practice of witchcraft. And Americans are pill poppers, drug addicts. Tuck that one away in your heart. All right, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, with the conclusion here to the book. Let me tell you about it once more. It's called Critical Condition, Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele, published by Doubleday. Dynamite book. Don't miss it. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. See you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.